This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Good evening, Kansas City. I'm Brian Nolan. You're listening to Radioactive Magazine. Tonight, we'll be discussing, yet again, Kansas City's minimum wage ordinance. Last week, you heard our conversation with Justin Stein, Kansas City's organizer for Jobs with Justice, where we detailed the specifics on the minimum wage ordinance. Tonight, we'll be getting into some more details about some of the nuances, some of the fights to be had, and some of the problems that other groups in the city have determined they'd like to discuss about Kansas City's minimum wage. So I'm joined today again with Justin Stein, Kansas City organizer for Jobs with Justice, Alice Kitchen, and Molly Fleming. Alice, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Alice Kitchen, and I am a worker rights board member and a co-member of the Loretto community here in Kansas City.
And I'm Molly Fleming. I'm a longtime community organizer in Kansas City working with Missouri Jobs with Justice on the minimum wage ordinance and other worker issues in the state.
Justin, you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself again?
Yeah, I'm the Kansas City organizer with Jobs with Justice, so pretty much all that I do with my life.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm going to very quickly introduce the minimum wage ordinance. It was passed by the City Council on Thursday, July 16th, in a 12-1 vote. In Kansas City, Mayor Sly James stated the city address, he said that our entire community would suffer as long as people who work hard are unable to bring home enough money to provide for their families. That was one of the philosophies overriding the efforts to make sure that this passed. What's going to happen is we'll see an annual increase in the raise of minimum wage starting at $8.50 on August 24th. That increases up to $13 by 2020. You'll see an increase to $9.82 per hour on January 1st, 2017, $10.96 per hour on January 1st, 2018, up to $11.98 on January 1st, 2019, and then, of course, to $13 on January 1st, 2020. After January 1st, 2021, the minimum wage will be adjusted annually based on the cost of living. Justin and I spoke last week about some of the exceptions to the minimum wage ordinance. Those exceptions include persons 17 and younger, which is a similar carve-out that they have in Germany and Britain. That is, of course, an exception not without controversy. Government employees are exempted, except employees of Kansas City, Missouri. Apprentices, certain volunteers for charitable occupations, interns working for academic credit, tipped workers, and court-ordered community service. The fine for violating the ordinance is $1,000 for each employee for every week the employer violates this law. Today we're going to be talking about the benefits cliff. The benefits cliff, simply stated, is the concern, especially with single mothers, young women who require child care services, that in raising the wage, all of a sudden they will be they won't be able to qualify for some of those state programs. So, Alice, as a person who's had a lot of experience with social work in your life, can you tell us a few of your preliminary thoughts about this benefits cliff?
Well, I think it's overstated. First of all, single women without children aren't that's not the issue. They're not eligible at all. They, it's the ones that have some child care, and I think there's some concern that they would lose that. But if you look at the other areas, such as the earned income tax, the child care, this food subsidy program, there are numerous programs out there, and also health care for children, where the eligibility is higher. And so the minimum wage would augment that minimal amount of money that's coming in. I think it makes no sense for a few people to keep everybody's salary down. And if you think about it personally, do you want your children, your grandchildren, and your brothers and sisters to stay at a minimum wage for the rest of their life? These are people who have... They don't have full-time jobs. They don't have health care benefits. They have, maybe if they have children and they're getting some benefit now, they still have problems of having enough hours to make any income. I think it's an overstated argument. I think that the safeguards that we as taxpayers put in there also are benefiting the big employers because they're resting comfortably on the fact that individuals who need some subsidies are getting them. So we're paying out, you know, by having low McDonald's hamburgers, low cost, then we end up subsidizing them and they benefit enormously.
So certainly we're not saying, though, that no women will be harmed by this, that certainly some people will likely lose a certain degree of assistance for child care. Is that at least possible?
Some. But you're not talking about men with no children or no families. So you're talking about a few people, not to be understated or not to be underappreciated, but again, it's a few for the many. Would you keep everybody behind so that a few people aren't hurt or harmed by some type of progress for the other people?
So is the problem here that Kansas City, and this is open for everybody, but is the problem here that Kansas City is raising its wage, or is the problem that, assuming nothing else changes, that benefits are being effectively, that benefits are basically not being extended to more people?
So I thank you for a framed question that is pretty easy to answer. So the position of Jobs with Justice is that we actually need to increase eligibility for existing benefits, right? The problem with child care benefits, and Alice or Molly, because Molly, I know you've looked extensively at this as well, my understanding is that the accessibility level for child care subsidies has not been reworked since the early 90s, right? So that's a problem. We actually need to increase the eligibility for services like child care. In addition to increasing the minimum wage, it's not an either-or situation.
Yeah, that's definitely right. What we see in benefits like SNAP, which is food stamps, that as people earn more income, they do lose some benefits, but there's kind of an evening out, that as you earn more in income, that loss of benefits isn't causing a net harm to your family. That's true for most benefits that low-income families receive. The one exception that's pretty severe is child care assistance, and Missouri has amongst the lowest eligibility limits and amongst the lowest payouts in the entire country. And this doesn't just harm families, it doesn't harm women, it's actually a disincentive to work. If it is more expensive for you to put your children in childcare in order to keep a job, there's no reason, like from a logical perspective, why would you continue to operate in that, putting yourself in the red every single month? So this is something that the Missouri General Assembly last session did take a look at, actually did increase assistance for families, and did increase eligibility for different types of families, but we need to see that fully funded so that it can be implemented and we can do even better. So there is still a long way to go, some hope in the last session, but this is really something that should have bipartisan support.
So just, oh, go ahead, Alice.
Well, I would just say we're asking a lot from our General Assembly, and we have citizens that aren't benefiting from the resources that we have in our state. And just one example, a family of three, children and an adult, the most they can earn is $292 to be eligible. Under that threshold, they are eligible. But what that means is that they have to pay rent, they have to pay food, they don't have health care, they have to pay for their transportation, and if they have a phone. You multiply that out. Can you do that? Do you know anyone that could make it with three people supporting that? That's embarrassing, and I think we all want to change that. It needs help.
Well, I'd like to get into something else, and this it's sort of an overlap between the benefits cliff and one of the exemptions that the city council carved out. Again, as the weeks have gone by, you've seen more and more criticism about this exemption for those 17 and under. Justin brought this point up last time, that you often see homeless teens in Kansas City, or yeah. Interestingly enough, you don't hear about this problem, but teens living as the head of household. They're the sole breadwinner for a family of one, two, three, four, or even more. In connection with the benefits cliff, this exemption, Alice, I'd kind of like to get your thoughts on it. I mean, are we really basically sending out or marooning these young children who are earning money for their houses by raising this wage or carving out the exemption for them?
Well, first of all, they're emancipated minors, and they're obviously having the adult responsibilities, so it makes no sense to penalize them. We've done some hearings about what's going on, and certainly our state isn't putting forth the best effort to make sure that they have the resources they need. They're still young, but they have adult responsibilities. All children that are kept down or not adequately fed or housed or have adequate childcare, it hurts them in the long run. It hurts their ability to learn. And then if you don't have an adequate education, you can't go on and have a future. And you're stuck in a fast food job that doesn't have a future. You may be a home care worker. They're equally poorly paid. And they have enormous responsibilities, but they don't have a ladder to climb. And they don't have enough pay to go anywhere else. And they don't always have job security. And if they get pregnant, the women, they better not look pregnant, because it's easy to fire somebody when there's no labor standards.
So I'd like to hear a little bit more about some of the discussions that were had in the broader community. Molly and Justin, as boots on the ground, I think you heard some of the arguments about the benefits, Cliff, a little more intimately. And I need to be clear, too, in no way do I think that those arguments are implausible or fallacious, but I think they suffered from the same problem that the minimum wage ordinance itself suffered from, and that's a fundamental lack of data or analysis throughout the whole process. And it seemed oftentimes that some of the opponents of raising the wage in vis-a-vis the increase or the eligibility issue, that some of those folks were really the only people at the table who did have information about what the effect of Kansas City's minimum wage ordinance would be. So do you have any insight into some of the arguments that were made at this point, and were they having an effect in the conversation?
Well, you know, I think from the perspective of a lot of the folks who were lifting up some concern about what is being called the benefits cliff or the loss of benefits for families, there's some really real and legitimate concerns about the ways in particularly single mothers could be affected by the loss of particularly the child care assistance. And I think, you know, there's two ways to look at that. One is that, you know, doing something good could cause a level of harm, and is it equal or less than the element of the good? But I actually think the opportunity for the city now is actually take a much more comprehensive look about how our single parents, particularly poor single mothers in our city, doing, and what are the things that we can be doing at the local level, and what are things we can be advocating for at the state level that will have a tremendous impact on their well-being. Because the reality is, ultimately, raising wages for these mothers is a huge and important step in the right direction. It is taking what is becoming the burden of their cost of living from benefits and putting it where it belongs, which is in the economy, based on the hard work that they're doing. But the reality is, it is still almost impossible to make ends meet as a single mother. And we can be, just as Kansas City can be a leader in raising wages and setting a new standard for labor in this country, we can also be a leader in thinking about innovative solutions for how we're caring for our moms and how we're demanding that our state does that as well. So there's a lot of poor families that could be doing even better, and this wage raise is one step in the right direction. But I think your point, Brian, is right. How do we take a step back now? How do we do some research and gather clearer data about how folks are struggling to come up with innovative and unique solutions to pull them forward?
And I would add, just as far as the youth wage goes, so first of all, the coalition that was behind this effort to increase the minimum wage fought very hard against that youth exemption. Jobs with Everybody, Jobs with Justice, SEIU, this Stand Up KC, Empower Missouri, Communities Creating Opportunity. Everybody thought that that was a bad idea. And I would even add that the economic experts that were brought in to testify before the city council, when asked about whether it was a good idea to include a youth wage exemption, said, no, it doesn't make sense. Economically, it's actually a bad idea. So, you know, I mean, I think we're going to see as time goes on what happens. I would also just say, though, politically, Jobs with Justice is going to continue to try to fight this, to actually make sure that everybody who's out working receives and is eligible for the same minimum wage.
And Brian, you mentioned that there's problems with not having adequate data to make decisions. Well, it's even deeper than that. Some of the formulas that we're working with, the federal poverty level, that goes back to the 60s. It's based on food, the consumption of food, a third of your food, and they figured that. That's outdated. So, you know, we're working with formulas that don't fit today's reality, and that's a basic problem as well.
Mm-hmm. So of all the concerns that were balanced, the one about child health care, or child care benefits, Did the city basically respond to that concern by saying, you don't have enough data, we're going to steamroll this in? Or was there another concern that was being balanced, and that sort of the city moving forward with the city ordinance to increase the minimum wage because there was a timing issue?
So yeah, I mean, I think nobody can deny that there was sort of a rushed timeline as it relates to this issue, and we can talk a little bit more about what happened in the state legislature to sort of force that to happen. So yes, I think that there was clearly like a rushed timeline that the city council wished, you know, could have been stretched out a little bit more. You know, and I do think, you know, to be clear, I think it is very much safe to say that we are all concerned. Everybody who worked on this campaign wants to make sure that single women who are relying and need childcare subsidies continue to get those subsidies and get the support that they need, right? But I also think that, you know, some of the analysis that we saw is that we do see, right, like Molly said, people start to lose some access to those subsidies. But overall, the impact on individuals who are relying on some form of state assistance, as their wages go up, their net sort of income, their overall situation is in fact improving, even though their benefits level is decreasing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So it's important to know that there was a fear about a massive cliff effect that would cause, you know, thousands of dollars of a loss in income for single mothers on child care assistance. And the report that was done recently by Empower Missouri and Vision for Children at Risk, specifically about the impacts of changes in benefits based on wage raises at different dollar amounts, shows that for most family types, as the wage increases, benefits do go down, but the wage increase is actually greater than the benefits lost, so they're ultimately doing better. The one aberration to this is single mothers, for the most part, just aren't doing any better. Between $12 and $13 an hour, there's I think somewhere around $20-something dollars a month loss that they're not doing quite as well. But ultimately, it's just that they're not doing any better. And to go from making $6.75 an hour to making $10, $11, $12, or $13 an hour and not ultimately have the kind of net change in your quality of life that you should be experiencing, well, something's off in that. So the city council wasn't having to make a choice between raising wages for most families and single mothers being entirely slaughtered by new child care bills. It was just a note and a recognition that they aren't doing as well as they should be. And we need to think about what are some supplemental ways that we move beyond that.
One issue tied into this one is, does anyone have a legitimate fear here that all of a sudden fast food industry, they're not going to increase hours, or they're going to decrease hours, so they're basically paying what they otherwise were but paying people for fewer hours? I mean, I have a concern that all of a sudden, you know, and a lot of this data and information about the benefits cliff is probably based off of a 40-hour work week, you know, what people are making. But and it's no secret, the fast food industry does not provide consistent hours at the 40-hour level at all. It's very rare that it happens. Is anyone afraid that the fast food industry, the restaurant industry, is going to come in and basically penalize workers for having to earn more money?
Well, first of all, they've already been doing that. They don't hire them to the maximum of 40 hours because then they'll have to pay health care. So they've already been, you know, reducing their hours at whim based on, you know, demand. But that leaves the workers subject to two jobs, no benefits, transportation. The two different employers are competitors. So these individuals are really stressed to get to the work, to make their coordinate their schedules, and then if they have children, I mean, it's amazing. How do they do it?
Yeah, and I would just add, I mean, I think, you know, workers in Stand Up KC, the Workers Organizing Committee, can testify to this personally, right? So many of them work multiple jobs simply because of that fact. The fast food industry is already not giving people enough hours in order to sustain themselves and their families. So folks are already working multiple jobs. I mean, I also think that, I mean, at the end of the day, if we take a step back, I mean, what drives the economy is consumer spending and aggregate demand, right? So labor is a in our economy is a product of how much demand there is, right? The demand for labor goes up the more that there is a demand, aggregate demand for products and goods and services. And so, I mean, fast food industry, no employer can afford to start cutting workers' hours or laying off workers if the demand level stays the same. And quite frankly, there's a number of studies that demonstrate that by increasing wages for the lowest paid workers in a community, that in fact actually increases demand and stimulates economic activity, because we are in fact a consumer-driven economy. So that's more money that people are actually spending directly in the economy.
And it reduces turnover. And the better trained the employees are, I mean, there's lots of benefits from being a good employer, and we shouldn't dismiss the fact that there are some small businesses that do pay minimum wage above that, and they're good employers, but the ones that we're talking about are the ones that it's about money, it's not about, you know, the common good for everyone.
And can I just add one more thing? I mean, I think it's also important not to look at this issue in a vacuum. So we very much are about increasing the minimum wage, right? That is a core policy of Jobs with Justice. But this is also about a fundamental question of power, right? Power in our community, power in our society, right? Power in the workforce. And if workers are not also building more power, right, to have more say and more control over working conditions, over the industries they're in, right, then we're not doing enough. And I mean, I think that's why so many of us at this table, right, so many of the folks who worked on this minimum wage campaign, right, are also simultaneously working to support workers who are organizing themselves either into unions or to new worker formations, so that they actually have more collective power over a whole host of things, not just wages, right? I mean, including scheduling, hours, benefits, right? I mean, that at the end of the day, I think this is a piece of what is a much larger puzzle about making our city and our state and our country a better place for working people.
Well, and as we're getting a little bit closer to our time here, I'd like to flip the conversation back over to some of the other fights. In addition to the benefits cliff, everyone at the table seems to agree that, you know, this is a concern, but it's one that needs to be addressed in a different level, and that at the end of the day, the minimum wage raise ultimately is a net good. Mm-hmm. And yes, in fact, it's a good almost period, and so the need is to change, to make that change on the legislative level at the Missouri legislature. But I did want to get into some of the other fights that are happening right now. I know Jobs with Justice is involved in some of these, Justin. What happens if HB 722 is overridden? We talked a little bit about what HB 722 does last week. It prohibits a political subdivision from mandating that an employer provide an employee a minimum or living wage that exceeds the requirement of state or federal law, but not those laws in effect on August 28th, 2015.
I might actually see, do you want to take this, Molly?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So HB 722 is a bill that was passed by the Missouri legislature this past session, and the governor recently vetoed, though it faces a potential veto override this September. That is a blatant attempt by a lot of national interest groups, particularly the Restaurant Association, the grocers, the hoteliers, a lot of industries that are mostly corporate and thrive on low-wage work. It's a blatant attempt to try to undermine local efforts to regulate wages and benefits laws and prevent abuses at the local level. So what began as a bill to restrict cities from passing plastic bag bans ultimately has become this behemoth that is far-reaching. And if this veto is overridden in September, it would prohibit the ability of Kansas City to pass new wage laws, to pass new benefits laws, to protect workers. It could be as far-reaching as to actually prohibit the rights of Kansas City to pass laws about the rights of mothers to nurse at the workplace. So we're very concerned about what the implications of this kind of law would be, and also about what it means if national interest groups are using ALEC-inspired legislation to prevent local communities from making decisions that work best for those communities. So we are working very hard to ensure that legislators hear from us, that this isn't just a threat to workers, it's a threat to the sovereignty and the control of local communities.
So I think that's a great way to summarize what the issue is. What's the fight that's happening to oppose the override, if any, right now?
Well, Justin, you want to speak a little bit about what's happening on Thursday?
Yeah, so I think that there's so a couple things. So first of all, somewhat separate from House Bill 722 is that the Missouri Restaurant Association, Bob Bonney, who's the CEO of the Missouri Restaurant Association, has started a referendum to try to block and overturn the minimum wage ordinance that was passed several weeks ago by a vote of 12-1, right? So on Thursday, we are actually meeting at Pioneer Park, which is at that intersection of Broadway and Westport in Midtown, to hold a public action to demonstrate the public outrage at what essentially amounts to anti-democratic, anti-worker activity on the part of the Missouri Restaurant Association. This minimum wage ordinance was overwhelmingly popular, and now they are trying to kill it. I believe that their intent is to try to block the ordinance from going into effect, because I think in their minds, what they are trying to do is stop it from going into effect, because I think in their minds, if they do that, it might miss the deadline that House Bill 722 has in place for an ordinance to be in effect in order to be grandfathered in, if House Bill 722 does in fact become law. So they're really, quite frankly, using a technicality. They are trying to use a technicality, and they are trying to warp their reading of the law to block this ordinance from going into effect. Whether that is in fact actually the case, I think we would disagree with and fight in court, but we do actually feel it's really important to publicly name the anti-worker forces in our city who will do anything they can to stop working people from getting a raise. In addition to that, like Molly said, House Bill 722 is a horrible piece of legislation. It takes away the ability of local communities to have a say over basically how to run themselves. It sets a terrible precedent for a whole host of other issues. And so we are working with a number of representatives to try to sustain the veto of the governor. And again, anybody who cares about and believes local people should have control over what's happening in their own community. I can't tell you how many elected officials in Jefferson City I've talked to who say that they are opposed to Medicaid expansion in Missouri because they don't trust the federal government. It's kind of ironic that they would try to then somehow take away power from local communities from state overreach.
Now, six statewide initiative petitions have been filed on the statewide level. Is it related to some of these initiative petitions? Are they related to minimum wage in Kansas City? What is that fight effectively? I mean, an unrelated issue or not?
The minimum wage ballot.
Right.
The measures? Yeah, no. So, I mean, Jobs with Justice has, like you said, filed six of them at different wages. And that's essentially because we want to make sure that every possible door is open to go through to try to increase the minimum wage, increase wages for workers. I mean, I think we will always fight to increase the minimum wage. And any attempt by anybody to diminish the minimum wage or hurt working people, we're going to fight against. I mean, for us, this is very much a third rail political issue, right? You don't mess with it.
Well, and thank you for that, Justin. In the scheme of talking about some of these women's issues as they relate to minimum wage, Alice, would you like to tell us a little bit about Women's Equality Week of August the 23rd through the 29th? I know you've been an advocate for cities for the Convention for the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, and this event is sort of a celebration of that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it's a whole week of different events, informational, socially activating people to make improvements all around us. But it's the last week in August, and the pinnacle date is the 26th because that is the 95th anniversary of women getting the vote. We have the vote. We haven't used it to its capacity. Women in office have a tendency to look more globally. That's a generalization, but there can be improvements if we get more women in office and elective and appointive settings. So it's a whole week, and some days there's two and three events. There is one event where with fast food workers, the Fannie Lou Hamer Group, will be having a rally. We'll have the home care workers have a panel, and we'll talk about what their lives are like. So a lot of it will tie into women, their power, and their need to be in control of their lives.
I'd like to thank my guests, Justin Stein, Molly Fleming, and Alice Kitchen. You've been listening to Radioactive Kansas City, Radioactive Magazine, Kansas City.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.